Our speaker this morning is Dr. Gregory Wilson. He's speaking on commitments in church, conviction, and loyalty to a way of life.
I've had a, good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry. I've had a curious experience talking with some friends the past couple weeks. After the elections, they said that they felt a great relief. But they did not know that they were under the stress that the relief accompanied, which I thought was odd, that we could live under stress and we could live under pressure and not know it. And then when something happens, we feel the relief. So we have to ask ourselves as humans, what's going on that we can live under pressure and we can live under stress and be unconscious of it? It was just an odd thing. And before we go any further, I just want to say, it's good to see you, Jane. I'm glad you're here. So today we'll talk about commitments, and we'll continue to talk about the sense of peace that we've been talking about in prior sermons. And whenever I talk about commitments as a practicing counselor, I always ask myself this question first: do we have the capacity to commit? Many times couples come in for counseling and the word intimacy come to the surface quickly, or the words attentiveness come to the surface rather quickly, or the words you don't even hear me when I speak come to the surface quickly. And my question is, do we have the capacity to hear the other? Do we have the capacity for intimacy? Do we have the capacity to commit to something that is beyond ourselves? Because if we determine that we don't have the capacity, that is not necessarily a negative or a judgment. That just marks where we begin our work to mature so that we can have the capacity. And it's been my experience, if I've been in the relationship for 20 years, if I've been in the relationship for a number of years, and it has become evident that intimacy is lacking, well, then I must determine my capacity for intimacy has been injured or not developed because it's absent. If I've been attending a church for years and years and years and there hasn't been a passionate commitment to that church, then I must ask myself, do I have the capacity to commit? Yesterday and Friday evening, we experienced something very special in this church. And part of the mission of this church is community education, not just about the Unitarian Universalist values, but also in the Unitarian Universalist values, how that manifests itself in the community at large. And what we witnessed and experienced yesterday and Friday evening was a commitment to understanding global warming and is there something we can do. And that is the mission of this church, just as we did with separation of church and state and just as we did with prison reform, and we will continue to do in the future. Because this church does have the capacity to commit. We are mature enough to have the capacity to commit. Today, I'd like to focus on what I consider the core of spirituality. We hear many conversations about spirituality and that we have to have a sense of spirituality to be healthy, that churches have a spirituality, nations have a spirit. But there are some things that are missing when we talk about spirituality that I think are absolutely essential. And I think that there is a single point in spirituality that needs attention and focus. The single point of that spirituality is within us. We can get a picture of this point when we look at the relationship between a mother and an infant, a primary caregiver and an infant, not to use sexist language. Thank you. Was that boy bright or what? Who's teaching that young boy? I'm telling you. Was he thinking quick on his feet? I was impressed. Okay. when we're talking about spirituality, I think we have to talk about peace. And we have to talk about the capacity to detach from the external world. And what we see in the mother and the caregiver's relationship to the infant is we can see, I think, the most mature spiritual place a human being can get in the infant. And that is when, before I get there, when you hear these words that there was a bill passed recently about about people who would protest the abuse of animals, and now there's a bill passed that will call these people terrorists if they block the profit of corporations by protesting, by getting in the way of trucks, I suppose, and such, or damaging property. Have you ever heard of the word terrorism connected to corporate profit? What does that do to your spirit? When I first read it, what it did to my spirit was, my spirit jumped out of my skin. I said, that could be me that they're referring to. I said, I can see that happening. I know how much fresh water it takes to provide beef to this country. And it's insanity. And I know that water is becoming a precious commodity. I know that. What happens one day if there's part of this country who's deprived of good fresh water, where it gets so expensive poor people can't afford that water? I might be standing in front of a truck where there's abuse of fresh water for animals for a particular industry. If the people over here aren't getting it, I could see myself doing that, and now I can see myself being labeled a terrorist. I'm out of my skin. I'm upset. Mature spirituality is the capacity to get back into my skin and find a place of rest and find a place of peace, or else I'll get lost out here in my own hysteria, in my own thoughts. It's Søren Kierkegaard who says that in order to become a more mature self and a developing self and a growing self, the father of existentialism, writing in the early 1800s, he says that we must have the capacity to recognize that we are finite and that we do have limits, but yet at the same time, within our imaginations, we are also infinite creatures. We can go beyond ourselves and we have to return to ourselves. He also says we can get lost beyond ourselves upon reflection upon ourselves, so that when we reflect upon ourselves, we have to come back to ourselves. And it sounds a bit complicated to me, because it is complicated. So we go back to the infant and we see the seeds of this. When we look at an infant who is upset, when we look at an infant who is raging, what do we see generally? We see a caregiver who picks up the infant and holds the infant and cares for the infant, so that the spirit of the infant that's out of the skin gets soothed and finds rest within its own body and is at peace again and is completely whole. And we see in this picture the beginning of the healthy, peaceful self. It is a model and it is an experience for all of us. It also lets us know that our truest self is pre-thought. Our truest self is experience. Our truest self is in relationship. Our truest self is dependent upon environment. For us to be our truest self, we need to be in an environment that's emotionally safe, and we can see that in the beginning of who we are as human beings. The infant is its truest self in the arms of another. It can be, it cannot be otherwise as human beings. A while back, about 15 years or so ago, or late 1970s, the term codependency was flourishing and everybody was going crazy with this term codependency, and rightfully so. I mean, it identified the oppression of women in our culture, and we needed to have a revolution, and we needed to continue that revolution, as Helen did here this morning. However, what I learned in that revolution was that there was a cry against dependency. And all dependency got kind of lumped into that movement, and there was a stance over and against dependency. That's problematic because we are dependent relational creatures. We must find a way to be in a healthy dependency. So that when I'm out of my skin because of this terrorism label, because of the people who govern me begin to move in a direction which I consider oppressive, I need to be able to come back into my skin and rest and come to that single point within myself of being at ease and detached from the external environment so that all language, all thought is gone, so that I'm completely resting in my body in order to come back out to understand the world. This is the core to spiritual health. This is the core to the capacity to commit, being able to detach and being safe within. And the reading we read this morning where Siddhanta talks about coming back to oneself and resting in oneself and not giving power to the external world, that's also what she's talking about there. My capacity to commit is equal to my capacity to commit to myself. There's a technique that I was talking to with a friend about, saying, I'm going to talk about this technique right from the pulpit, I'm going to say it. He said, you can't do that from the pulpit. That's counseling. That's therapy stuff. And I said, well, who decides what's counseling and therapy? And I said, the Unitarian Universalist minister decides because the pulpit's free. I can say anything I want from the pulpit, so I decide. Okay. However, I think it's important because I think we stay away from this from the pulpit. And I know in churches I have been in that people stay away from this because they would want to put the responsibility for our spirituality on a belief in something external. And I'm saying quite the opposite. The core of my spirituality is something, my responsibility is internal. It's who I am. Just as that baby is held and completely can rest back in its body, which is my struggle. But when I look back on my life, there are fragments of myself all over the place that when I rest and when I meditate and when I breathe deep and when I say that I'm complete and when I say that I feel whole and I have a mystical experience and I come back, there are still pieces and fragments of myself all over the place. And how do I know this? I do a principle when I do counseling and live my own life and speak from here and to others, and that's that when I reflect on my history, I need to make loving meaning of my history so that I can embrace my full self. Now, this particular technique is an interesting one. It goes something like this. Let's say that there's something you struggle with. It could be any number of things. It could be self-judgment. I struggle with self-judgment. It could be every time before I go to bed at night, I grab 3 cookies. You know, it could be that. You know, and then I wake up in the morning and I'm not where I want to be. So it could be food. It could be alcohol. It could be drugs. It could be meanness. It could be I say things I don't want to say. It could be I'm not taking care of myself the way I know I ought to be taking care of myself. But pick any number of those if something like that goes. You will have an image of yourself that goes along with that struggle. Just the way it is. We will have that image, that shadow side, that negative side. But as I go for those cookies and I see myself and I can feel myself putting my clothes on and they're a bit tighter, I have an image and self-judgment that goes along with that. I also have an image of myself that's fit, that's trim, that's running down the road, that's my ideal image. So maybe it's a negative ideal and a positive ideal image. But I'll have these two images within myself. And one I love, but the one I love, I'll judge the other because I love this one and I'm not it. I've got this ideal narrative going on in my head that I'm always comparing myself to, but I never reach because it's ideal because now I'm 50 years old. And I'm not going to reach the 22 up if that's what my ideal image is based on. That's just reality. But there may be some of that ideal image and ideal story I could grasp, but I don't for a number of different reasons. But nonetheless, I'm comparing myself to this ideal image, and I've got this negative ideal story going on over here. So now I've got these two stories about myself going on in my head. This technique says take the image that you don't like. And think about that. That's the image of myself that I don't like. That's the first issue. I don't like that about myself. I don't like so ideal. So I take that image and I take this ideal image. And I take this image that I like. And first of all, I have to wrestle with this ideal image, because if it's not an image, I realistically cannot become. I need to go in a process of transformation so that the images I have of myself in my imagination, I can become. How many of us have ideal images in our head when we work through them and we talk? We have a difficult day at work, and so when I'm driving home, I'm having a conversation with the boss. I wish I would have had with the boss, but in reality, I can never really have that conversation with the boss because it's unrealistic. But there is a conversation I could have had with the boss that is realistic, but I didn't have. I need to make that distinction over here. Now, I take these two images, and I merge these two images so that they become one image. Don't do this by yourself at home. Actually, that's why we have the Saturday morning group. We call it Breaking the Bad Habits, but if I had to summarize that group up, it's really a group of how do we love our full selves, 10:30 on Saturday morning once a month. It's a group, how do we work our lives so we love our complete self? Because if we love our full selves, we'll stop the self-destructive behavior. At least that's the belief of that group. Okay. Numerous occasions I've done this. I've taken these two images of myself, and one might think it would be easy, but I've taken an image of myself struggling with something that I'm struggling with, and then this is what I want to be, and I know I can be because I have been that way in time, but and I'll start bringing them close together. You know what happens sometimes? Boy, they spring apart. They just repel each other. It's like magnets, right? They just repel. That lets me know that I'm on to an area that I need to pay attention to in my spiritual life. That's what that lets me know. Or they'll come together and I can't get them to merge. They'll phase in and out, but there'll be no definite, and it's just, my mind's just off the wall. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's an easy fit. So if I ever do this, I start out with easy stuff. But when you look at the infant, when the infant's spirit is moving to rest in its body, the external world is going away. And that spirit is completely becoming one with the body beyond the external world. The infant is soothed. It's at ease. There's not a concern. If I've got a negative image or I'm struggling with something negative in my head about myself, even if I do this meditation, if I haven't resolved this, all of who I am is not here. Because if I go back and get that memory or I go back and get that experience, it's not at rest within me. Earlier in my church experience, probably when I was about 30, it came to me when I was attending, I had put a lot of value in taking communion in a Christian church, and I realized that not all of me was coming to communion. Not all of me was coming to the table. I was leaving parts of myself out, parts of myself boxed up and out. Not all of me was available to myself. When the infant is at rest in its body, all of that infant is available to itself. My capacity to commit to myself means that I will work with all of my history so that I can hold myself with loving meaning, knowing that I am in a community and in relationships that love and care about me. Because it is an odd thing. I will not be able to do this kind of work if I am in a relationship or a community I'm at odds with. It just doesn't work. So my work is not only about my inner world, but it's also about building a community that's emotionally safe, that I can commit to and that I am committed to. How do I commit to myself that I'm willing to go through all of my history in a way that I love my full self so that when I meditate, when I pray, when I come to a position of stillness, all of me is there at ease. From that position, from that place, I can step back and re-enter the world and make objective meaning to the world, to know who I'm going to commit to, where I'm going to commit to, and for what purpose I'm going to commit to. I'll tell you this experience, and you can see if you had anything. Like, I remember when I was working on my doctorate, my dissertation, and when I started, there became this image in my imagination that started to loom right here. It was the document of the dissertation. And it was weighty, and it was there. And I had to attend to it. And when I didn't attend to it, it got heavier. We're putting an addition onto this house. It's looming right here. There's a beginning and there's an ending, and until it's ending, it's going to be right here. Sometimes I'll make commitments to things and they'll loom here, and I know it's the right thing, but I won't be attentive to it, or I won't fulfill it, or it'll drift away. But when I call it back, I can still feel I made that commitment, but I didn't do it. How many of you ever struggle with that? You make a commitment to yourself, you make a commitment to your community, and it drifts away, but it's still there. It still weighs on us. We haven't attended to it. And I can think back 5 years ago of something I said I was going to commit to and do, and I didn't, and it's still there. It still weighs on me. And then I must ask myself, have I structured my own personality as an adult? Because I'm responsible for structuring my character formation, my personality, as an adult. As a child, I'm not, but as an adult, I am. I'm responsible for my character formation as an adult. If I have these commitments, things, and activities in my imagination that when I recall them, they weigh on me, I must ask myself the question, what's going on with me that I've organized my life that has become a normal thing, even though it's commitments to different things, different topics, different communities, different ideas to myself about different issues. But through time, there's always something going on there, so I can access this negative feeling at any time in my life on a regular basis. I must ask myself, what's going on with me that I'm doing that? That I'm not loving that part of myself. I'm feeding a part of myself that continues to be negative through time. In order for me to be able to rest fully back into my own skin, I need to attend to that. When I read the story about this label of terrorism, which I think is problematic, now, if I stay hysterical too long without exploring the full meaning of it to see if it really is what I think it is, because often people that are close to me can tell you, I'll get hysterical about something and put in a totally different meaning to what it is until I check it out. And sometimes they have to check it out for me to let me know about it, because I'll just do that. So I have to know that about myself. If I stay too long upset, that is my window to my spiritual work. That is not a negative. That's my opportunity to say about myself, what's going on that 3 days have gone by and I really haven't checked the full meaning of that, but I'm still really upset about it and I can't get over being upset about it. And I want to go out and change the world, but yet I want to fight the world, but yet I don't do anything about it, but yet I want to fight the world and I stay out here and I never come back home. To myself, to write a senator, to form a group to write senators, to do some practical things. I remember we formed this one group about letter writing about different issues, and about 15 people came to the group, and most, I would say, two-thirds of the people had a pet idea that they really wanted to deal with, really wanted to write about, but it was like, if the world doesn't change, I'm not going to do it. Nobody was willing to do the small steps to get along the way. They wanted to do major steps. We want to deal with global warming, but we don't have any education about it. We want our children to be well educated, but we don't teach them to read. If I stay out there and I don't come back to do my homework, that lets me know there's something going on inside myself that I need to attend to, because it is preventing me from resting into my body. is preventing me from coming to that single point of spiritual wholeness where I can love myself and I can begin to move throughout relationships and throughout community with an attitude of love. Can and do I have a normal process of reflecting on who I am as I go through the day? There's a meditative process, I believe it's Sisters of Charity that practice. At the end of the day, they'll reflect back on their life, they'll reflect back on, and they'll go through their entire day to see where their understanding of God has touched them. And I was always fascinated with that, that they took the time to go through every minute of their day to reflect on it. Because when I do that, sometimes TV characters come up in my head. You know, odd things come up in my head. Which lets me know I'm not really disciplined about my life because those images aren't about me. Those images are about non-reality. They're not about me. Do I have a process where I reflect on my history and I reflect on my reactions to things? And do I allow those reflections and my experience of reflection teach me about myself to help me pinpoint where I need to do my spiritual work so I can rest fully within my body so that I can come to terms and comfort and love myself so that I can transform myself to be that way as a member of a community. And it is from that position that I have committed to myself, that I can come out and commit to a community of loving myself and comforting my sorrow and being in a community that cares. Can I take advantage of my reflective process? And if I'm not, then that's where I begin my work to understand how come. Can I begin a process of where I practice reflection on my life, knowing that's the key to building a loving, caring community that's active about the issues we need to be active about, such as global warming. Today, let's make that decision that if we are not attentive to that, we will be attentive to ourselves, then to others, and then to the larger community.